Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick here with another of the 25 years podcasts, and this one about the 2006 Ravens, a favorite of all our teams, a favorite of a lot of us, at least, until that horrible playoff loss. Rita, how you doing?
Good. I'm great. I'm good for now until we get to the playoff loss.
All right. You'll know Rita as the NFL chick on Twitter, at the NFL chick, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Any other place to talk football with you normally?
Gridiron Gals on Twitter as well. The NFL chick and Gridiron Gals on Instagram and Facebook.
All right. Very cool. All right. And I know I've been noticing you've been on some various things and sharing your opinion. I really wanted to have you on, and I appreciate you doing this with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about the 2006 season, and you know, one where the Ravens coming off a terrible 2005, frankly, where the team really had to decide that Kyle Bowler was not the guy for this franchise, went out and got Steve McNair, a quarterback who'd been locked out of the Tennessee facility.
Yep. I remember that like it was yesterday, honestly. And that was, you knew it was the end of his era in Tennessee. I believe they had drafted Vince Young that offseason, top five. And you knew that Steve McNair needed a home. And immediately it was like the Ravens were the perfect fit because that defense was really good. And although the skill players weren't as great as maybe other teams, Steve McNair was a player that could elevate anybody that he played with. So you still had a Jamal Lewis, you still had a Todd Heap, you still had guys, but you just needed a guy to get those guys and going. And like you said, Kyle Bowler just wasn't it. We had realized three seasons in that he just wasn't really going to develop into something that they wanted. This team was pretty built for the playoffs. So it was a perfect fit that McNair came here. And immediately you saw the results of that season.
Yeah, week one, of course, they go in and they trash the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yep. 27-0, a game I remember the heat from right now. But McNair, the very first drive of the season, drives him 80 yards in about 8 minutes or so right. Yep. Down the field.
That was when you, and ironically, like you said, it's week one. I don't really like to get too invested in week one games. Honestly, for me, the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season, I'm still not really sure how teams are going to be. It could always change, injury or, you know, anything. But you knew right then and there.
Oh, yeah.
That they were legit. You could feel it. You could feel the chemistry that he had with his guys. You could feel that defense was riding on him. It was just something different that Bowler just did not have the year before. And so you knew that as long as there were no injuries, that was going to be a special season for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, it really was. They had the pieces together, certainly on defense, draft picks, top to bottom strength across that defense. Week two, they destroyed the Oakland Raiders 28-6.
Yep.
Week three was an interesting one because they trailed 14-3 entering the fourth quarter against Cleveland, came back and won that game 15-14 on a 52-yard field goal by Stover. Pretty much as the game ended. Matt Stover, obviously, you know, was getting on in his career. Yeah. At that point. But 52-yard kick was not a certain thing the way we'd expect it from Tucker.
Right.
At this point. My girlfriend and I were at the game, now wife, then girlfriend, and we sat behind a guy who was wearing a Babatunde Oshinowo jersey. Now, his special place in Ravens history was that he was the sixth round draft pick that the Ravens used to trade up from number 13 to 12 to take Haloti.
Haloti, yes.
Yeah, it was Babatunde.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
Cleveland had that pick, correct?
That's correct.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because a lot of this stuff, Ken, is just muscle memory. Like, it's just stored in the back of my brain. So I didn't look this up, but I just remember this stuff so well. And I believe Cleveland had the pick. And like you said, they traded up to go one spot to get Nada that offseason, that 2006 season. And obviously, he had an immediate impact on that defense as well.
Yeah, sure did. They came home and beat the Chargers in week 4, 16-13 in the Todd Heap.
That was a huge game because that's Phillip Rivers' first year. Obviously, the Chargers go 14-2. Again, this is muscle memory. I'm pretty sure that's how that went.
That's
right?
Correct.
And they were the team to beat. And like you said, Todd Heap at the end of that game, that was a big game for the Ravens at that moment.
Sure was. Sean Merriman, the ex-Maryland player, missed that tackle. Very nice gift to the Ravens. They did a good job with LaDainian Tomlinson that day, who had a huge season and was already embroiled in contract difficulties with the Chargers at that point. Who also had Michael Turner that they didn't know exactly how to do. Next 2 weeks, a little bit of a downer. They lost a game to Denver on, I believe, Monday night. Yes, it was Monday night, 13-3 in Denver. And then they came home and they lost a game to the Panthers,
21. Yep. I remember that Panthers game because it felt like a game that they should have won. But Steve Smith had a good game. Correct me if I'm wrong, or he at least had a really good play in that game.
Had the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah. Okay. So I knew he had something significant happened in that game, and they eventually lose that game. But it felt like a game going into it, like, okay, we're at home. The Ravens obviously are one of the best home teams in the National Football League. You thought that that was going to be pretty easy, and somehow they lose that game.
Yeah, they should win that game. And I don't know where you were, Reed, at this point, but I'm thinking maybe this team is not quite as good as we'd hoped. You know, losing on the road to Denver, losing at home to Carolina, not great losses.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I thought that they were still good. I thought that they would make the playoffs, but I didn't see them turn it on. Because in the coming weeks, obviously, they play the Steelers, who, you know, just won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. That off season, before the off season, so you know you didn't see what was to come in those coming weeks in that series.
Yeah, and then the Ravens then put together an extraordinary 5-game set. They went down to New Orleans. I don't know how many people remember the win at New Orleans, but they led 21-0. The 35-22 final score is not at all reflective of how close that game was.
Yeah,
and a couple guys really had their coming out party there. Ronnie Prude had, I think, 2 interceptions in that game, and somebody else had a pick 6. It might have been Landry, but it might have been somebody else who's a defensive back who you don't hear of too often.
I think it was Landry. I think it was Landry, and I also remember the quarterback draw that McNair scored himself in that game to kind of seal the deal and win that football game. So, yeah, that was a big game for them.
Yeah, really, really outplaying them by that badly was not something that was really often done to the Saints down there. But they came in and they embarrassed them, and the Saints made turned the ball over a bunch of times. They played Cincinnati on November 5th, and this is now in Week 8, or actually it's Week 9 because there was a bye already. They beat them 26-20. Now, Cincinnati, thought of as the primary division contender. They'd been good in 2005. They had a big year from Carson Palmer then. And it was thought that they would certainly contend for the division. This was the first notion that they were really not as good as the Ravens.
Right, exactly. Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Carson Palmer goes out with a knee injury in that playoffs literally the year before. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't, you know, they just weren't at full strength anyway. But the Ravens capitalized off of that and they dominated.
Yeah, it's funny, the Bengals always have kind of been the Bengals, but I think it was Chad Johnson at the end of the game, or maybe it was Henry, the guy since deceased.
Yes.
But when it went up not high for a deep pass over the middle of the field on the last play, and it got intercepted, and Palmer was livid about no effort on the play. But we've seen that so many times now from AJ Green last year, and obviously, you know, I don't know what it is about the Bengals culture that they just have not had really good effort receivers.
And
definitely good quality receivers.
You know what's funny about that? It's like I think Chad is a guy that at the very least made some type of attempt.
Yes.
Because there's a play that we see a lot, that's a gif that we see all the time, where Chad goes up and makes a play and Ray Lewis puts a hard tackle on him. It's a pretty well-known shot. I think at some point it caused a flag to be thrown, but it was a textbook play. It literally was flagged just because it looked like he hit him too hard. hard, but he went up for that pass and he paid for it. He paid for it big time. Chad did.
There's another one where Chad Johnson got hit within the 5 yards line of scrimmage. No flag, but, right. but he goes back to the sideline and goes, I accidentally ran into Ray Lewis. It wasn't an accident.
But we know for a fact that one side of it was not an accident.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right. So the Ravens then go to Tennessee in week 10. They're 6-2 and they play the Titans and get down in that game 26-7.
Yeah.
26-7. It just looked like crap. Vince Young was at quarterback, as you mentioned, for the Titans. Huge coming home game for McNair. The play that kind of started to turn it around was a 30-yard touchdown pass to Ovi Mahaley,
wow.
where he rumbled down the left sideline until Juszczyk beat it. It was many years. That was the longest reception by a fullback in Ravens history. 30
wow.
yards.
So, wow. Really. That's Mahaley is a name. Wow. That I think I've taken out of my memory. And now that you brought it back.
Put it back.
Yeah, you put it back in there.
He had a big second half. He really, after that game, he was a very significant part. He had about 20 receptions in the second half of the year. And for a fullback, that's quite a bit.
That's huge. So. Absolutely.
Yeah. So they end up winning that game on McNair to Mason, putting ahead 27-6, mm-hmm. and then getting a blocked field goal from Trevor Price in the final seconds after Vince Young got him down the field again to get him in range for.
Yes, I remember. Yes, absolutely. Trevor Price is a guy that, you know, the Ravens are really good defensively, and so there are guys that are integral parts of the team. But Trevor Price was, I felt like, a fan favorite of sorts, similar to like a Kelly Gregg, right? Where it's not a guy that it's really popular outside of the fan base, but to those that follow, Trevor Price was a guy that people really loved that signing when he came. And so that again, that defense, particularly that defensive line in 2006, was so good.
Yeah, he was a huge part of that.
He
was usually inside as a five tech. He could play on the outside as well. But when he was inside, he drove that pass rush completely in terms of getting interior pressure. He's like what Pernell McPhee would become in 2014 as a guy who commanded double teams, didn't have the hugest sack total himself, although I think he did lead the team in sacks. I think he had about 13 sacks that year, too. So it was his best year.
Yes, it was.
But he was a completely dominant interior defensive lineman and a favorite for years, although he really never was very healthy again for the Ravens for the rest of his career.
No, not that I can recall, but like you said, when he was on and he was on fire. And that was like one of my favorite players. I've always liked guys on defense. And Trevor Price was one of my favorites at that time.
Well, me too. Atlanta Falcons come to town in week 11, and the Ravens beat them 24-10. Michael Vick got his first shot in Baltimore, and they really rolled him over. They did a lot of different people had a sack, including Jerome Sapp had a very noticeable pylon sack. Kelly Gregg had a sack in one-on-one. And I tell you, who was on the sideline doing the reporting was Tony Siragusa. I've never heard him as excited about any individual play as he was about Kelly Gregg sacking Michael Vick. It was like the highlight of his broadcasting career.
So correct me if I'm wrong. Was Gregg there when Goose was there? So maybe like drafted or came up underneath him. Okay. So that's probably a personal thing for him. But yeah, Vick, I think, so I know what, 4 years prior, right? They played Vic in Atlanta. Remember, Vic breaks his ankle or leg in that game. And
it's
so,
yeah,
it was a preseason game. So a lot of people were anticipating that. First of all, it's Michael Vick, one of the most electrifying players you've seen. And a lot of people was concerned about, this being some type of revenge game and he was going to run all over the place. And the Ravens were like, nah, not today. So
it was a good game. They had to come back from a 7-0 halftime deficit, but they made it happen. Didn't look so good in the first half. The next week had their most dominating win of the season, I think, including the opener. They beat the Steelers 27-0. They had 9 sacks. I've got videos of every Ravens game, but I've got videos of the sacks broken up just so I can watch all 9 in a row.
Yes.
And that is very, very good listening if I ever want to go to sleep. It's, it just puts me asleep like that.
easily one of the best games, games that we had seen thus far from them. And again, they had just won the Super Bowl the previous year. So that was such a huge game for the Ravens because everybody felt like, okay, yes, like you mentioned earlier, the Bengals were good. They were trending up. But what happened to Carson Palmer in the playoffs kind of leveled them a little bit. The Steelers, obviously, a Super Bowl champion, so they are the team to beat. And the Ravens, like, not only beat them, I mean, they beat them down that year, like, what, 57-7 or something total?
The 58-7 in the two games is exactly right. 58-7,
okay, yeah.
Very good. Your recollection of this is really remarkable. I appreciate having you on for this. This is great stuff. A guy I really loved had probably his biggest game against the Steelers, and that's Corey Ivey,
yes,
the slot corner. So he stripped the ball that Adalis Thomas ran into for the end zone. So it was one of the nine sacks, and that's probably one of the best known sacks. He also was somehow in the backfield on a screen pass that Roethlisberger literally threw right into his belt buckle, if they were belt buckles, and he picked off. So he had a huge game that year and really a great season for this team.
And so, of course, that's the game, of course, the Bart Scott one, right? Where he said he'd never been hit so hard in his life, Brent Roethlisberger says.
He left his feet, but yeah.
It didn't. No, but hey, Ben says he got hit hard. If he'd never been hit that hard before, then hey, look, I believe you, Mr. Ben.
Well, next week they had a chance to put the division away on the road at Cincinnati, and they needed a win, and they couldn't do it. They got beat 13-7. They're down 13-0. Really a kind of a very weak offensive performance.
Yes.
It wasn't good foreshadowing for what would happen. It was a little bit worrisome that the Ravens would off and on have these really empty offensive games, but this was one of them, and a team that really shouldn't have beat them did. And they had to continue on and try to do well.
Yeah.
The next week they went to Kansas City. Now Kansas City had an extraordinary record of not losing December home games. It had been like 17 of 18 or maybe 18 in a row that they'd won at home, a streak that went way back.
Yeah.
And they beat them 20-10, and they were up 20-3 in that game, so they really dominated it the entire way.
This is the one part that I don't remember. Are we in Trent Green years or Matt Castle years at this point?
Okay. Matt Castle's 2010. This would be Green, yeah.
So these are Trent Green years. So that makes complete sense, obviously. Kansas City was very good, except for when they play Indianapolis. So I can absolutely see how they were at a point where they were pretty much hard to beat at home. They were perennial playoff contenders at that point. Like I said, except for when it comes to Indianapolis, they just couldn't beat them. So that says a lot about that team and how they were able to turn things around from that point on, from the loss from the week before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's move on to the Cleveland Browns game on December 17th. They finally clinched the division, and who's at quarterback again but Kyle Bowler? All right, that's enough of that game.
Thank you. Moving along.
Okay, so they played the Steelers again, and McNair is back at the helm on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
They improved the record at 12-3 with a 31-7 win. I remember Palomalu getting beat over the top directly for, I believe, by Clayton.
It was Mark Clayton. And, Mark Clayton, in that particular series, not just that series, but that year, right? Because a lot of people will have their opinions about Clayton. I don't like to consider Clayton a bust. And I say that because I think 2006 is a year that if you looked at his productivity, it showed that having a good quarterback could get him involved in that offense. And I remember very clearly that Palomalu play that you're talking about, that he gets the ball to Mark Clayton. And that was the potential that he always had. It's just, obviously we know what happened after 2006 and then eventually, Flacco comes later on. But, that was one of his – that was his, literally one of his best seasons, and it showed why. Okay, first round draft pick, doesn't feel like it's so bad because the McNair connection that he had, not only in that series against the Steelers, but just his productivity all year was consistent.
Yeah, he's a good player, and you know, he's kind of burdened by the first round draft pick.
Yes.
But if he'd been a later round pick, we'd say that was a real value.
We'd have no issues with Clayton if he's a later round draft pick. It literally is because he's a first round draft pick.
All right, so all is not won for the Ravens. They had to play the Buffalo Bills on the final day of the season. The big thing they were playing for was the bye.
Yes.
They had to get that bye. They had to secure it. With the win over the Steelers, I believe that was the win over the Steelers, put them back in position to get a bye because one of the other teams, it might have been Kansas City. No, it would have been Kansas City because it would have been maybe the Colts.
Probably Indianapolis, yeah. Because obviously, yeah. Well, yes.
Could have been New England too. So it was one of those teams lost to put them in position to get the bye. But anyway, they had a tough time in that game, and they were only hanging on. And not until Chris McAllister's interception in the end zone did they really put it away.
Yeah, that was another – again, you talked about the fluctuation of the offense in the season. And you had outings where they were dominant, and then you had outings like the Buffalo game. Like, okay, well, clearly you should be beating this team. So what's the issue here? So ironically, in hindsight, I feel like that was a sign of things to come, maybe. And we just – but the record showed that they were such a good football team and that for the most part they were able to overcome some adversities that you just did not see what was – about to happen.
Yeah, that defense from top to bottom had led the league in everything.
Yes.
They had the Colts come in there. The Colts had just played a not a difficult game, but they had to beat Kansas City.
Yes.
At home in the playoffs, and then come, you know, after the Ravens had been off, and just thought this has got to be that year.
Yep.
That the Ravens are going to be able to do it. And sure enough, they don't score, not a touchdown anyway, against the Colts, lose 15-6. They really held – the defense did its part. They held Peyton Manning down very well.
Defense did its part. Obviously, the biggest glare was Jamal Lewis having, what, under 3 carries in the second half, I believe. Although the first half he was effective. He was pretty non-existent in the second half, and it just became a passing game of sorts that wasn't necessary. And that's the part that I think hurts the most, is that you had a good game plan going in, and instead of sticking with the game plan, you tried to switch some things up. The thing that stands out to me the most about that game is when – I hate to use this term in a bad way, but, you know, Jerry Sandusky always says the hay is in the barn. Well, the hay was in the barn when McNair threw that, it was, I think, attempting to throw a touchdown pass to Todd Heap, and he was intercepted in the end zone. And so that kind of, you knew then, it just wasn't their day. And, you know, we had a lot of questions about the play calling and such after that game. But, you know, look, truth of the matter is that it just wasn't their time. You thought it was, you know, this is the same Super Bowl that literally had Prince going to perform Purple Rain of all things there. So you thought that this was your time, right? And then, you know, hey, something happens and says, nope, you got to wait. So that was the most disappointing thing, is that they had dominated for the most part the entire season. And then, like you said, the defense does their part, which is very hard to do against that Colts offense and the way that they were wired. And yet you could not score a touchdown. And
Colts very much a Achilles heel for the Ravens during that entire period.
Yes.
Here's what I want to hear from you. I want to hear your story of game day for that playoff game, because I've got my own, and I was beyond distraught, furious about the game, as much as I've been furious about any game ever. In fact, more, I'd say that the 2011 playoff game at New England, not as bad. I just didn't think they were
going to win. Oh man, I cried.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was bad, and as far as being sad and being upset and having a long amount of travel to get home and whatnot, that's always sucks. But in terms of expecting to win the game and then getting beat, the only thing that comes close is the 2019 Titans to me.
Yeah.
And this is just, it was just awful.
So it's funny because that day I tailgated. I didn't go to the game that day, but I tailgated. I went down to the stadium and I tailgated, you know, with some friends from work. And when I was going back to, you know, wherever I was going to watch the game, I went to a watch party to watch the game. On my way back, I had something come over me, Ken, and I did not feel good about that game. And I can't explain it. I don't know why, but my intuition said that this something wasn't right. And so, of course, I'm not going to say that out loud because I don't, you know, you don't want to be the person that says, hey, y'all, I don't like the way this feels on me. You know, the game hadn't even started and I felt that way. You know, and I was just thinking, well, maybe this is just like just some doubt that people have. But it was strong that day. It was very, very strong that day. It wasn't a cold day, you know, very similar to the 2019 playoff loss. Just the mood of the day. It was just the vibe was so, the energy of downtown was so great. But I could not shake this feeling of something just not going to be right in this game. And obviously, you know, we see what happens. And it was just so disappointing to see all of the thing, everything that we watched them go through that whole year, basically kind of just be wasted.
Fall apart.
It fell apart. I mean, it literally fell apart. The offense being as inept as they were. And the Colts is a good team in the playoffs. They find ways to you know, bend but don't break. And I hate that saying, but that is literally the Colts in a nutshell, and how they do things, particularly in the playoffs. And
they're not a big team, though. The Colts are not a big team. So it's not a team that the Ravens, with their huge offensive line, should have been able to really handle.
Right. They really should have been able to handle them. Bob Sanders, I believe, safety of the team. I mean, he played really well. So, you know, you just really thought that as long as the defense does their part, I mean, I think that was the consensus to all of us. As long as the defense holds their end of the bargain, it's a walk in the park. And so to see that they only came out with 6 points against a defense, honestly, that I can't even remember if they were even middle of the pack. I'd like to think that they were high 20s at that point, was really disappointing. And seeing that Jamal Lewis was a non-factor in that game also just kind of really was disappointing, because you want to get your best players involved. And in the second half, he just was non-existent.
Of course, that was Jamal's last game as a Raven.
Yes.
Rita, we got to cut it here, but I got to tell you, this has been just a complete pleasure rediscussing this season with you. And I, you know, your memories are very firm on this. I would love to have you back for another one of these episodes if you've got another topic you'd like to go over.
Sure.
Tell folks again where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at the NFL Chick. Oh, and also Project Game Day. Myself and Glenn Clark, we do post game for Ravens games on PressBox Online. And you can find that on Facebook.
All right. Outstanding, Rita. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.